From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is up, beautiful people? Yes, it is about that time. 1 o'clock has rolled around and Current Sports is pumping through your speakers. As always, I am your host, Al Martin. On this January 14th, folks, we've got a hot show in store for you. In just a moment, we will break down the Michigan and Ohio State men's basketball game last night. Yeah, the woes of the Michigan basketball program continue. We'll dissect how and why and if this team can turn this whole thing around. We'll also invite Brooks Lambeer, MSU men's and women's soccer reporter for Impact Sports, to break down the MLS draft that will be taking place this Thursday. And also, folks, Barbershop Wednesday is live and in full effect. The legacy of Peyton Manning. Where does he rank? And does his postseason woes take him out of this whole top QB argument? We'll discuss that and so much more, but as custom here on the show, let's start the show like we always do. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners, again, for this January 14th. All right, let's start with that Michigan and Ohio State game, shall we? Now, after watching the Buckeyes win the national championship, Michigan fans watched the Buckeyes hoops team ride the momentum, defeating the Michigan Wolverines 71-52, the final. Now, Buckeyes freshman guard D'Angelo Russell, how good has he been this year, huh? He added another quality performance to his stellar freshman campaign. He put up 21 on 6 of 12 shooting. Russell is averaging 18.1 points per game, 4.6 rebounds per game, and 5 assists per game this season. Now, Wolverines are just 10-7 on the season and will need to put together a good run if they have hopes of making the tourney. All right, not only will Jaylen Brown reunite with family members on the 24th, but he will be on the lookout for a new place to enhance his skill in basketball. Now, with Michigan being the fifth official college, the number one prospect visits, his blog expresses his excitement to see what the campus has in store for him. Now, Brown is currently a junior, has a stellar GPA of 3.1, and aims to make it even higher before attending college. He stands 6'7", playing small forward at Wheeler High School in Georgia. All right, David Price, Alfredo Simone, J.D. Martinez, and Al Albuquerque are four Tigers that have filed for arbitration prior to yesterday's deadline. Now, each player, along with the Tigers, submit proposed salary figures by Friday. If they cannot come to an agreement, the cases will be brought to an arbitrator next month. Now, the Tigers have never had a case go before an arbitrator in the David Dombrowski era. Of the four players, Price, Simone, and Martinez have increased projected salaries for 2015. All right, backup goaltender Peter Mrazek continued his strong play and made 25 stops for the Red Wings as they beat the Buffalo Sabres 3-1 last night. The Red Wings had one goal from Darren Helm.
As Helm carries up the right wing, catching up with him is Anderson. Helm's right in, he scores!
And goals from Gustav Nyquist, Tomas Tatar, Kyle Quincy, added to assist. Detroit maintains the number three spot in the Atlantic Division after the win. All right, how about my Pistons, huh? Pistons looking for their third win in a row tonight versus the Pelicans. The Pelicans, with young MVP candidate Anthony Davis, are fighting for a playoff berth in the very competitive Western Conference. Now, the Pistons are surging since cutting for Josh Smith. Detroit has won 10 of its last 11 games since getting rid of Smith. And the Pistons were 5-23 with Smith, but have moved to 14-24 and sit just two games in back of the eighth seed in the East. All right, New York Jets hired Cardinals defensive coordinator Ty Boyles to replace Rex Ryan in the vacant head coaching gig. Now, Boyles had his work cut out for him, taking over for a team coming off a 4-12 year. Now, the Cardinals went 11-5 this season with three different starting QBs, a testament to the play of the offense, or excuse me, the defense under Boyles this season. Boyles is 2-1 as a head coach and served as the interim head coach of the Dolphins out in 2011 following the firing of Tony Sparano. All right, Jim Schwartz is also out of a job right now, former Detroit Lions head coach. He was let go by the Buffalo Bills. He was the Bills' defensive coordinator last year. And the most anticipated bout in boxing between Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao has finally been, well, or at least it seems to be. I feel as though we've heard this story before, but it seems to be agreed upon by on Pacquiao's end, at least. Part of the agreement is that Mayweather will take 60% of the fight's earnings and Pacquiao will take the other 40. Mayweather and his camp have not commented on the terms of agreements. If everything looks good on paper, the fight will take place at MGM Grand Casino out in Garden Arena in Las Vegas on Saturday, May 2nd. Honestly, folks, honestly, if I got to be 120% honest with you, I still don't know if that fight's going to happen. I feel as though we have been waiting for this fight for so long, and we've heard this same old song between Pacquiao and Mayweather before, that they agree to terms, that Pacquiao will agree to the grueling testing that Mayweather was first vying for, and then you know what happened? The fight didn't happen. So I don't know. I'm still not being dubbed with it. I'm not going to get my hopes up when it comes to that story. All right, folks, our phone lines are now open. We'll be taking your calls like we do each and every day here on Current Sports all the way up until 2 o'clock. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything that is on your sports noggin, hey, you know the number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We have a loaded show with a ton of discussion. Now, in just a moment, I'll be inviting our soccer expert here on Current Sports. His name is Brooks Lambeer. He is the MSU men's and women's soccer reporter for Impact Sports. He'll be breaking down the MLS draft, the combine, and giving us his thoughts and predictions on whether or not a few players possibly have a chance at cracking the pros. So he'll be talking about that later on. We have an exciting Barbershop Wednesday for you all as we will be diving into the legacy of Peyton Manning. Yes, Peyton is certainly a quarterback that deserves to be in the conversation as one of the best to ever do it. But where exactly does he rank on that list, considering as though the postseason has not been very kind for Peyton Manning? So, the legacy of Peyton Manning, where does he rank? That's our Barbershop Wednesday, and we'll also be talking about the Detroit Tigers. Four Tigers, again, filing for arbitration, so you don't want to miss any of that, folks. Also, to remind you all that it is Wednesday, and each and every Wednesday night here at the WKAR-TV studios, we have a great time on Current Sports TV this week, tonight, this time at 5 p.m. That's right, we're bumping up this week's time from 6 to 5 due to scheduling differences. Ira Childress, the Okemos High School athletic director, will be joining me on the show tonight to talk about his position with Okemos, to talk about being athletic director at the high school level. Not many people also know that Ira was even a sports broadcaster at one point. So he's got an interesting story. We'll talk about, you know, all of that and so much more. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience tonight, just simply go to WKAR.org to sign up online for free. All right, well, I want to invite really briefly here before we get to our guest, the man behind the glass. He is our outstanding engineer for Current Sports, Alex Shark. Happy Wednesday, my man.
Happy Wednesday, man. And Michigan, they're just they're getting knocked on all ends here with that loss to Ohio State last night. You catch the game?
I did. I caught a little bit of it. I was actually out. Oh, and I want to remind people this as well. I was actually out at the Lansing Sexton and East Lansing High School game, boys' high school game. What a game it was. I mean, back and forth. So I was out covering that. And at the same time, of course, Michigan was playing Ohio State. So by the time that game was done, I caught maybe 10 minutes, ideally, of the game. But I tell you what, I posted just about every highlight that I shot from that game last night. And there was one redonkulous dunk by Mikael Miles. He's a senior guard for the East Lansing boys basketball team. He had a dunk that... it was probably the best dunk I've ever seen in high school basketball since I've been covering it. There's certainly been a lot more that can compete with it that I've seen on the tube. But in person, I have not seen a dunk that good at the high school level ever. And if you want to check it out, you can check it out right now at WKR.org. Again, you can watch full game highlights of that game. And that dunk is at the 3 minute and 40 second mark, if you want to take a look at it. Of course, Mikal Miles is the little brother of former MSU women's basketball phenom Clarissa Bell. So she also tweeted out a link to that video.
Yeah.
So,
and Al, yeah. Hey, I always have a question, because when you see these great high school dunks, one thing you don't see is the celebration after. It looked like the whole bench just jumped out of their chairs. Everyone was kind of on the court. How long, I mean, when you were there in person, how long did it take for him to get to the line and for play to resume after that dunk?
I would say about 10 to 15 seconds. I mean, after he made the dunk. No, it wasn't that long. I mean, of course, his teammates were going crazy. I almost got that, because, again, I was right near the bench when that dunk happened, and they went absolutely insane. The student section went absolutely insane. And if you look at that highlight for what I shot, again, at that mark, at the 340 mark of the video I posted, you can actually hear head coach Steve Fenimore yell, "Dunk it," before the dunk happens. So I think maybe Steve's voice, you know, hearing your head coach say "dunk it" on the sidelines, it kind of gave him some courage to just take flight like Jordan. I mean, it was unbelievable, though. You got to check that dunk out. It was sick, sick. So, all right, Alex, now you brought up the Ohio State-Michigan game.
Right.
I tell you what, this Michigan team, I think it's safe to say that we can put this team on the bubble right now. The Michigan Wolverines men's basketball team is having a very, very tough year. They are now just 10-7 on the year. Again, they lose a double-digit loss last night to their rival, the Ohio State Buckeyes. And, you know, there are a few glaring areas on this team that certainly have to be fixed. Again, if they even want to be in the conversation of at least even sniffing the NCAA tournament. Because right now, I'm sniffing NIT for this team, folks. First off, turnovers. Ohio State scored 19 points off of 13 Michigan turnovers. So whenever Michigan coughed up the ball, Ohio State certainly salvaged that opportunity and turned it into easy buckets. Michigan, I question, I mean, and you saw what Ohio State was able to do, going back and looking at the highlights of this game, when Ohio State started to enact that full court pressure, Michigan curled up in a ball and coughed up the ball many times. They can't deal with pressure. When they have a team that is in their face and is a relatively above-average defensive team, which I think Ohio State is, Michigan just kind of folds. Another aspect to this game, you got to give credit where credit is due. D'Angelo Russell was a man last night, Alex. He had 21 points. He went 3 of 8 from three-point land, 6 assists, 4 steals. So he's getting it done on not only the offensive end, but also the defensive end. D'Angelo Russell is a stud for this Ohio State team, and you better watch out for him. And, you know, when you talk about guard play, great guard play from Russell on the Ohio State end, subpar guard play for Michigan, which has been like that the entire year so far for the Wolverines. Looking at the assists last night, Michigan matched a season low with 8 assists on 20 made field goals. That cannot happen. That is not team basketball. And you talk about point guard play, you know, guys like Derek Walton Jr., Spike Albrick, Abdur Rahim, they all combined for just 4 of 17 from the field. 4 of 17? That's not going to get it done against any team, let alone Ohio State. What were your thoughts yesterday, Alex?
Yeah, you bring up some good points there. And for Michigan, you talk about the guard play. It's so hard when you are spoiled rotten with a guard like Trey Burke, who was such a scoring threat at the one position. Ohio State is very fortunate to have Shannon Scott, who we haven't brought up yet, who is similar in that he's kind of a two-way guard. He's kind of in between that point guard, shooting guard position. And it was kind of a big term when they announced over the summer for Ohio State that Shannon Scott was going back to that one position. So, when it comes to Ohio State's guard play against Michigan's, yeah, I mean, Michigan definitely is struggling with finding that playmaker between that point guard, shooting guard with LeVert, who's kind of taken him more under his wing this year. But overall in the game, Al, we saw Michigan starters benched. We saw the fact that Bayline was putting players in who were going to give a little bit more effort or was going to give them the best chance to win.
Yeah.
That hasn't been seen in Michigan forever. The fact that you get your starters benched before the game is halfway over.
Yeah,
so that, for me, was a big statement from Michigan yesterday. And obviously, give Ohio State some credit. Very tough place to play on the road. They're a ranked team, probably aside from Wisconsin, one of the better Big Ten teams this year. But again, Michigan has to find their identity, and we could even take a lesson out of this if you're Michigan State, because if you don't shoot the ball well, if you're relying too much on the shot, that might cost you a big game and a big-time scoring difference.
Alex, I think you're reading my notes because that was my next point. Michigan from deep. That's a big thing here. I mean, they went 6 for 26 on three-pointers last night. That's a lot of jacking it up from the arc, point-blank period. Now, if you look at it, you know, they have attempted at least 20 threes in each of their 7 losses, shooting 29.2%. And this is a glaring number right here. That equates to 50 of 174 in those games. 50 of 174, Alex. Again, when the shot's not falling, you got to go to something else. And right now, Michigan has nothing else. Folks, what do you think about U of M's men's basketball team this year? 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. I want to give some quick hit headliners here when it comes to Tom Izzo's presser, which took place at noon. Of course, the Michigan State men's basketball team, they don't play until Saturday on the road against Maryland. But Izzo had a few, had some news, I guess, to relay to all of us. Tom Izzo says that Matt Costello is fine after testing. Of course, he was a little bit under the weather. But Denzel Valentine, he was found to have an ulcer in his throat. Now, it sounds bad. Definitely sounds bad. And Alex, have you ever had an ulcer in your
throat? Never had an ulcer, but when you hear ulcer, it sounds like something serious, doesn't it?
That sounds like...
It sounds serious.
That's a blinking red light. I mean, it sounds like a blinking red light, or it looks like a blinking red light, I should say. But Tom Izzo says it's no big deal. He's improving. So,
that's the thing, because you can get actually cancer from... Ulcers.
Yeah,
ulcers do cause cancer.
Exactly.
But it must be a very minor case.
Definitely. Obviously, because Tom Izzo said, hey, it's no big deal. He's definitely improving. He even went as far as to say that Valentine is 90%. And also that Brandon Dawson may be able to get his cast off by the Maryland game. But if not, perhaps not until next week. So there you go. There you have that. Just some quick things concerning the MSU men's basketball team. And again, Alex, I would not want to be a player going through the grind of practice throughout this week, because I tell you what, hearing Tom Izzo's comments after that last game, that again, they just barely squeaked out against Northwestern, it seemed as though this week was going to be a week of hell. And he said that this team will look like a totally different team come time for Maryland. So I'm excited. I'm excited about that game. I'm interested to see how that starting lineup looks. I'm interested to see what players break out and will elude any sort of consistency. We'll see. But there you have that. Just some quick thoughts on the MSU men's basketball team. All right, well, let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports. It's always a fun time when he is in the house. He has just walked in to our Current Sports studio. His name is Brooks Lambeer. He is the MSU men's and women's soccer reporter for Impact Sports, and he's going to talk all things MLS draft and all things about the possibility of a few players making their pro dreams come true when it comes to the MSU men's soccer team. Brooks, how you doing, my man?
I'm good, man. Just finished putting up a feature video we just did on a local kid, Josh Behrens, who's still playing for Michigan State right now. He's looking to get a second medical red shirt currently. And, you know, he had 2 torn ACLs, so he's looking to come back next year. So it's a very good feature video we have on our MSU Impact Sports YouTube account, and it'll go up on the website probably later today.
Nice. Well, yeah, Alex actually told me about it like minutes before we took the air today, and I'm like, oh, man, I have to check that out. It's more about like, what, 7 or 8 minutes, I think?
Yeah, it's about 8 minutes.
Gotcha. Definitely have to check that out, folks. He does an outstanding job at Impact Sports. So, you know, Brooks, before we dive into the draft that will be taking place this week, I want to briefly talk about a story that we actually had in our headliners, I believe, earlier this week, or I think on the heels of last week's show. I believe the MLS Combine. Am I accurate? This is the first time that the MLS has actually held a combine similar to, like, you know, an NFL Combine or an NBA Combine. Am I right? Can you talk about that a little bit? Because at first I didn't know that they, you know, would even go that far as to put together a combine for soccer.
Yeah, it's no, they've done this in the past. This isn't really a first thing.
Okay, it isn't.
It's starting to get bigger and bigger and bigger as, you know, they expand to more teams. But they've had this in the past, and it's very similar to NFL Combine. You're gonna run through agility drills. The only difference is they have, you know, so many. They usually invite 55 seniors. You know, you say if you want to come or not, And then, you know, sometimes they replace them with sophomores and juniors that are leaving for the draft. They're leaving, you know, early for the draft. And they, what happens is they split them into four teams. It's like a sponsored by Adidas, so they have all like these different Adidas names, like Predator, Adi Zero, like all these different ones.
Okay.
Yeah, like after the all the soccer shoes they have. And what they do is they play three games each in front of MLS scouts, and that's just kind of how it works there. You just play, and you go do interviews as well as the MLS Combine, or as the NFL Combine, do some interviews, and you know, they kind of judge you from that. And then the draft is this Thursday, so it's kind of weird how NFL, there's such a long, you know, in between, and then MLS, there's like 2 days.
Yeah, that's crazy. And now, what kind of drills are these individuals put through?
Well, agility.
Do they run like the 40-yard dash?
Yeah,
or something
it's like a 30-meter. They do like a 30-meter dash. Adam Montague tested very well in one of them. He was in the top 10 in the agility drill. I don't know what else they do. They can't kind of keep it pretty secret. It's not very well known about like the NFL Combine where you want to know everyone's 40. It's very low key.
Gotcha. Okay. So. Well, I gotta ask you. I mean, when you look at the players that were, of course, invited to the Combine and the players that are predicted to possibly get drafted for MSU, kind of break that down for us. What players do you see possibly going in the first round or going at all when it comes to the MLS draft? Excuse me.
Well, we have two players that were invited to the Combine who are seniors, and I think there's really only two that really have a possibility to get drafted. That would be midfielder Fetai Alashe and forward Adam Montague. Alashe would be the best chance of getting drafted in the first round. I've seen anywhere from 2 to 15, two being 1 and 2. Obviously, you have Orlando City at 1, the new expansion team, and you have NYCFC, New York City Football Club, which is the other expansion team. So they have the first two draft picks. But I've seen anywhere from Sporting Kansas City, which would be a very good fit because they do need a defensive midfielder. Real Salt Lake was at the Sweet 16 game against Washington. And Kyle Beckerman's a very good defensive midfielder, but he's getting old. And, you know, Fetai could fit that role very well in the future. A lot of what you draft for in the MLS is you don't draft players to play right away. You draft them for your future. Most players don't play right away. It was very rare, unless you're like a Harrison Shipp who went to Notre Dame and got a lot of time for the Chicago Fire last season. You know, a lot of these guys are really getting drafted to kind of sit, you know, come off the bench or play, you know, start only so many games just because the transition from college soccer to MLS soccer, it's different. It starts to wear on their legs because you play so many more games than you do in the college soccer season. So
to break down that disparity between college soccer and the pros and MLS, I mean, how many more games are we talking here compared to college?
I mean, you're probably playing, you're maybe playing 20 in college. I'm sure you're playing close to 30 or 40 games in professional. That counts league play. Then you have like your cups you play against some of the Mexican teams, and you know, there's CONCACAF. There's a whole bunch of little things, like little cups you play for. Then, you know, MLS playoffs are a little different because, you know, in Europe they don't have playoffs. They just whoever has the best record at the end of the season wins everything. Mm-hmm. You know, MLS you have that, and then you have the conferences, and then you have the playoffs, and so that adds a little more. But it's a lot of wear and tear on the legs.
Now, you talked about Adam Montague and Fetai Alashe, those two players having a great chance of being drafted in this year's upcoming MLS draft, again, which will be taking place this week. What makes them so special, and how good are they?
Man, what makes Fetai special is he's a workaholic. He works. He's everywhere on the field. When I talked to him and I did a podcast with him last week, you know, he said that's my best trade. I get everywhere. I can cover the field. He plays great balls out of the back, great chips and crosses to players who are wide open. He hits them usually right in stride or right in the chest. He's just a good defensive player. And when I watched him play, so the MLS All-Star Game was in Portland this past summer, and what they did is they brought in a new thing where the PDL team, the 23 team, which Fetai was on, was going to play the future MLS All-Stars, like the young guys, the first and second year guys.
Right.
And that Portland Timbers PDL team was very good, but Fetai really stood out, and he looked comfortable, and I'm talking, he looked a lot different from how he played at MSU. He looked very comfortable on that PDL team against those MLS, you know, young all-stars he played against. So, you know, he looks very comfortable. I think Adam Montague is a very good forward. I think he'll be drafted in anywhere from this. There's only four rounds, so I would I would say between second and fourth round.
And how many picks each round?
It varies. There's 19 to 20 sometimes. It's weird how it's not structured the same way as the NFL draft is.
Gotcha.
But Adam's very good forward, holds the ball up top very well. Adam Fatai is very good for any team. Adam has to have a specific team that fits his style. But he's a very good passer. He's not very great on 1v1. He's not the fastest guy, but he's a smart player. He holds the ball up top like we've talked about before. And, you know, I think he's a good bench player, you know, to come off the bench in the MLS. I think he can really help a team.
Now, you know what, Brooks, when diving into this discussion, it's so interesting because, I've had, especially this past summer when the World Cup was going on, we had a lot of callers that wanted to chime in and talk about the USA team and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I would have conversations away from the show with just casual sports fans and fans of soccer, for that matter, they would talk about how, you know, the international soccer is so big, mm-hmm. and how the MLS is trying to reach that same realm of a lot of soccer leagues internationally. Mm-hmm. So is it safe to say that MLS isn't the ideal dream when it comes to these players going and getting drafted in the MLS?
Yeah. If you look at Zach Steffen from Maryland, played for the U.S., you know, underage teams, the 20 and the 17s, and he's on the 20s right now, and he's over in Germany playing in the youth system for one of the good German, you know, European clubs. And, you know, a lot of kids leave America to go play in Europe. Some work out, some don't. That's kind of a decision and a choice that the player has to make.
Why do they make that leave? Is it more competitive over there? Is it a better brand of soccer? Do they get paid more? What is it?
I don't know if you get paid more. Better brand of soccer, and I think just a better overall chance of making that professional dream. I mean, who doesn't want to play for Man United at Old Trafford, and who doesn't want to play for Bayern Munich or Barcelona or Real Madrid? You know, that dream is, you know, I think every American soccer player, you know, a male soccer player has that dream of, I want to play in Europe and I want to be on NBC Sports and I want to play against Ronaldo and Messi. I don't think it's quite there for MLS, especially with Landon Donovan leaving. And, you know, we do get the old European players like Steven Gerrard signed an 18-month contract for the LA Galaxy, and Frank Lampard's coming over after he's done with Man City in the EPL season. You know, we kind of get the so-called washed-out European stars to come and finish their career, you know, and then they end up retiring. You know, not that David Beckham and Thierry Henry weren't great for the MLS because they attracted fans, but, you know, we just don't have that star young American player that really makes the college or the academy players really want to stay in the United States to play in the MLS.
Folks, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we're talking with Brooks Lambeer, MSU men's and women's soccer reporter for Impact Sports. Excuse me. Now, Brooks, you know, I want to talk about going back on that same token now. Mm-hmm. What is the disparity when it comes to those who are drafted into the MLS? Are we talking mostly college players at this point?
Yeah, we are pretty much a lot of college players. It's pretty much all college players, I would say.
Any minor league soccer players?
I mean,
anything?
You have MPSL kids, but they were, you know, like we discussed in the summertime, MPSL, like Lansing United, DCFC, are all collegiate players. That's when they come out of. What happens is with USL Pro and everyone else, they're professional, so you sign a player from that team. That's how that works. So to answer your question, it is all college players coming in the MLS draft. You have your homegrown – not everyone's drafted. So, example, Jay Chapman from MSU has left. He's not coming back. He's going to be a homegrown player for Toronto FC. And right now, from what I've heard from Coach Rensing, is that he's in talks with Toronto FC, where he grew up in their youth academy, and they're discussing a contract negotiation. So he would, you know, get a contract from Toronto FC, and he would be, you know, kind of under the little safety umbrella with them because he was with them for so long. He's probably asking for a little more than the regular homegrown contract, which I think he deserves because he was a great player at Michigan State and he did a lot for the program, and he's a very good soccer player, and he had offers from European teams. I don't know how far those talks got,
right?
But you know, when people start writing stuff on the internet, I think it's pretty safe to say that I'm sure there were little talks in between. But you know, Toronto needs him, and you know, Fatai can end up in Toronto with Jay, and that'd be kind of funny if it was, because they're best buds,
right?
And
right.
I'd love to see that. But yeah, as far as the MLS draft, it's all college players.
Gotcha. So, all right. So you got Adam Montague, you got Fataya Lache, of course. Those two, really, you know, a lot of people projecting them to go in this year's upcoming draft. What type of impact can these two make right off the bat? Can they do that, or is it kind of tough in the MLS to do that?
Well, like I said before, it's a little tough because a lot of coaches don't want to play a first-year player from the things I've talked to with other reporters and from what I've read. But, I mean, like I said, if you got a Harrison Shipp on your team who did so well for Notre Dame collegiately and he, you know, comes and plays like pretty much the second half of the season for the Chicago Fire, you know, why can't Fatai do that? Because Fatai was just as much of a game-changing player for Michigan State as Harrison Shipp was for Notre Dame last year.
So you don't see it happen a lot where first year players come in and make an immediate impact.
Yeah, it's very different from the NFL and from the NBA.
Right.
You're not looking for that. You're looking, you know, but also what I've talked to a lot of other reporters is MLS, the scouting for MLS isn't stupendous. It's very off and on. There's a lot of hit or miss. You know, there's not like, if you ever watch the draft, you never know on these mock drafts where people are going to go because they're going to pass on players. They'll move down. You know, like Kevin Cope last year, he was supposed to be a first rounder. People passed on him. He ends up in the 25th spot. You know, so who knows what could happen to Fatai,
right?
You know, who didn't play much in this MLS combine because he tweaked his groin a little bit. So that can hurt his draft stock. Adam Montague did very well at the MLS combine. He scored a goal. He started two games. You know, so you never know what's going to happen in the MLS draft.
That is certainly true. All right. Well, you know, if these two are taken, Brooks, and with the loss of a few seniors on this squad, I mean, what will the MSU men's soccer team look like next year? I mean, what possibilities can this upcoming year allude to?
Well, I think you lose a lot with Adam Fatai. You lose a lot with Tim Kreutz leaving for graduating and Ryan Keener graduating and going to grad school. Jay Chapman leaving hurts the team a bit, but there's a lot of positives to this team. A lot of freshmen played last year. Zach Carroll and Zach Bennett are very good players, and Damon said, you know, they have a very good possibility to be drafted next year in the MLS. So you have Andrew Herr back there. Jimmy Fiskus played very well. Ken Krolicki, Jerome Cristobal off the bench. Mark Antonini showed some signs. He didn't score, but he did well offensively. A lot of creativity still left to play left on this team. I can go on for on and on with all these players,
right?
Because you know I've seen them, you know, practice and play in games. But you know, who can't forget Jason Stacy and the great goal he scored against Western Michigan. So they have a lot of talent. I think they're going to be very underlooked next year. They're going to be under the radar, and I think teams might not take them very seriously from what they lost. And they also have a very good, you know, recruiting class coming in as well. So, you know, a lot can happen in the next couple months and until the season starts next August. So who knows what will happen.
All right, only time will tell, my man Brooks. Okay, well, the draft this Thursday, what time is that taking place? Is it a two-day event? Is it a three-day event? How do they do that?
Well, it's two rounds are the first day, and then it's weird. They don't air the third and fourth round. They call the players.
Really? So, oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. See, it's a lot different from...
A lot different.
Yes.
So they just have to wait around their phone all day then, huh?
Yes. If you're in the third or fourth round, you got to kind of sit and wait. You know, like when they show in the NFL draft, the guy's waiting for that call. You know, but...
Wow. Yeah. Well, I hope no one has Metro PCS. let's just pray on that one. All right. Well, we'll see. Brooks Lambeer, again, there you have it. Brooks Lambeer, MSU men's and women's soccer beat reporter for Impact Sports. Brooks, as always, fantastic job.
Thank you, Al.
All right. Well, let's hit our first break of the show. When we come back, we've got an interesting Barbershop Wednesday for you, folks. What exactly is the legacy of Peyton Manning, especially seeing as though he is contemplating maybe hanging up the cleats? Where does he rank on the all-time QB list? We'll talk about that and so much more. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your guy, Al Martin. Well, we always ask you all to chime in. Again, you can call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up our social media pages as well. You can also tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR, or even leave a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. I see a few responses right here from those listening to the show right now. Zachary Swisetsky has tweeted me, and he's actually just taking a look at the incredible dunk by Mikael Miles, East Lansing High School basketball senior point guard. He had an unbelievable dunk last night. I caught it on film. Again, you can check it out, WKR.org, at the 340 mark of that particular dunk. And, you know, I actually tweeted out last night, hashtag dunk of the year with three question marks, and he said, agree, possible. And then he has two emojis. Emojis are smiley faces and just faces, for those who don't know. And they have both of their eyes wide open. So it was a crazy, crazy dunk. He actually even screenshotted, Zachary even screenshotted the Mikael dunk midway through the air. Crazy, crazy dunk. And we also have a question. This question is for you and I, Alex. This comes from TG, Those Detroit Guys podcast. I was actually a guest on this podcast not too long ago. And they actually want to ask, how do you feel about this trade now? Who would you want now? And it has a picture of Brandon Jennings. Right now, his stats read 14.3 points per game and 6.5 assists per game. And guess whose picture is below Brandon's? Yes, Brandon Knight's 18.2 points per game, 5.1 assists per game. Brandon Knight looks like, I feel as though he's found, I don't know, another gear and is playing out of his mind with the Milwaukee Bucks this year. But for me, to answer your question, again, those Detroit guys, I would want Brandon Jennings right now because I always live by the phrase, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I feel as though Brandon Jennings, when he's starting to get it now, I think Stan Van Gundy has done a great job of honing this team and making these players recognize what their roles are, respectively, from the 1-5 position, even bleeding onto the Detroit bench. Brandon Jennings is starting to find out now that, hey, there's moments when I have to take a step back and get my teammates involved, but there's also moments when I can take over a game and go on a hot streak. He's starting to find that balance because I feel as though in prior years, especially looking at last year, Brandon was so frustrated that he said, give me the ball, everybody else get out the way, I'm going to try to make things happen on my own and attack the basket. He's starting to find that balance, and you're starting to see those numbers, especially in the assist per game category, go up steadily. Again, he's almost averaging 7 assists per game. That is the highest average he's ever had in his career. So right now, I got to go with my man, BJ.
Al, I got to ask you something. I want you to answer this.
Yeah.
Who does Brandon Knight play for?
The Milwaukee Bucks.
Who?
Exactly. That's a great point, too. Not a great team, right?
Exactly. Who does he play for? The Milwaukee Bucks. He is probably one of two scoring options on the entire team. So his numbers are probably skewed a little bit. Maybe he found that scoring gear because he has to score because he plays on the Milwaukee Bucks. So for that reason, I have to say that Brandon Jennings, I would much rather have a Jennings this year compared to Brandon Knight. And although maybe he's taking more of a scoring role, Brandon Knight, Brandon Jennings right now, is probably the hotter guard.
But I will say, Alex, you know, even though I don't think Milwaukee is that good, they are actually the 5 seed right now in the Eastern Conference. Milwaukee has been playing ideally better basketball in Detroit this season. They're 20-19 right now. They're right in back of actually the foursome in Chicago, Toronto, Washington, and Atlanta. So don't bash them too hard because Milwaukee is in a better place than Detroit right now.
I hear you, but let's be real. Do they have a lot of can you name 4 players on the Milwaukee Bucks?
Well, you know, other than Brandon Knight, I think this team, if I had to name off the top of my dome.
That's what I'm saying. They got
Jabari Parker.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Jabari Parker. Got injured to start the year. Right. He's done for the season. I have a player who's actually on my fantasy team, Giannis Antetokounmpo. That's a mouthful, isn't it? That's a crazy name. He's been relatively consistent. I think Antetokounmpo is having a solid season. OJ Mayo. Don't forget about OJ. OJ has been, you know, even though he doesn't play any defense, OJ Mayo has been filling up the stat line when it comes to the offensive numbers relatively well this year. And if I had to name one more, maybe Chris Middleton. Chris Middleton is a guy who can come in and give you solid numbers as well.
Former Piston, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, they got some solid pieces here that they can play with. So, but in the end, I live by the mentality, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Brandon Jennings is starting to show you that he can be a point guard in every definition of the word for the Detroit Pistons. And when he is good, hey, you can even make an argument that he's a top 10 guy. maybe a top five guy at times, because I've seen Brandon Knight just get hot and stay hot. So, hey, that's a good debate, though. Heck, that could have been our Barbershop Wednesday today, huh? Thanks a lot, those Detroit guys, for posing that question to Alex and I. Again, if you want to call in, give your thoughts on anything, 517-355-9527. Tweet me at AlMartinWKR. Or leave a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. And we have another discussion here that should spark up a lot of debate. It comes in the form of the legacy of Peyton Manning. Of course, Peyton Manning is a household name in the NFL. He has been for the majority of his NFL career. We've seen this man put up numbers that are just sick with it. And, you know, now that he has been eliminated from the NFL playoffs, the question that is posed is whether or not Peyton will or even should come back, and if he doesn't, where does he rank in the lore of NFL history? So here we go. Barbershop Wednesday, the legacy of the great Peyton Manning.
I mean, we can't talk straight in the barbershop. Then where can we talk straight? We can't talk straight nowhere else. You know, this ain't nothing but a healthy conversation.
That's right. Tell him, Cedric. Healthy conversation here on Current Sports. Each and every Wednesday, we love to, quote-unquote, to use the cliche, we love to embrace debate. And this Wednesday, we decide to dive into a subject that has really been highly talked about ever since this past weekend's NFL, NFC and AFC championship games were put into place, I should say. So Peyton Manning was one of the teams that were eliminated in his team, I should say. Peyton Manning's team, the Denver Broncos, is one of the teams that were eliminated from the NFL playoffs. And, you know, Peyton has had, you know, such, you know, he's getting up there in age and has had, you know, kind of a rocky year on the end of this past season. And it now alludes to the question whether or not Peyton Manning will or should even come back to be the quarterback of the Denver Broncos. Now, it's really interesting now, because if he doesn't, of course, the immediate discussion that takes place is Peyton Manning's legacy. Where does he rank when it comes to the greatest quarterbacks of all time? Heck, even the greatest players of all time. And it's really debated about. And the reason that it is a debate is because of Peyton Manning's postseason success. Now, I'm going to dwindle down some numbers and statistics and really break it down in just a sec. But initially, to start this conversation, Alex, I got to ask you, what is Peyton Manning's legacy?
Yeah, man. I mean, I think he's a legacy of heritage, obviously, with his father, Archie, and the success that the rest of his family has had in the league. But overall, there's always a tainted part of Peyton Manning, because look who he did beat when he won the Super Bowl. He beat Rex Grossman. It's not like it was a down-to-the-wire game. It's not like he faced a phenomenal quarterback, right? So there's always some tainted points to Peyton Manning's legacy when you're talking about it. He also lost, you know, this is the ninth time that he's lost his first postseason game. So there are some stats to Peyton Manning, and especially recently, the way the Seahawks played him, the way the Colts played him, they played him pretty well. So recently, it does hurt him a little bit. But overall, this is a guy who has set tons of NFL records, a guy loved by the league. He's a face of the NFL. So overall, I think he's a beloved figure. Like I said, he is a legacy. So I'd say overall, it's a pretty positive note for Peyton Manning.
Where does he rank in your top five?
I'd put him about
top 10. Is he even in the top 10?
Yeah, that's the thing. And I think the first big question you have to ask is who do you think is a better quarterback overall, John Elway or Peyton Manning? Because I think only one of those quarterbacks can go in the top five. I would say Peyton Manning still has the edge over John Elway. Would you disagree?
Well, I want to break a few things down here, and you bring up a few interesting components to this discussion. First off, the glaring number that you brought up that I really think deserves to be talked about a lot, and again, folks, if you want to call in and debate about it, 517-355-9527, is the number 9. Peyton Manning has had 9 1-and-dones. That is the highest one-and-done average in the history of the NFL. 9 times Peyton Manning, and I hate to do this because I hate to sort of put the, I guess you could say, the blunt of the of a playoff disappointment on the shoulders of one man, but because Peyton plays the quarterback position, he's naturally going to get criticized for that number, point blank period. Now, I think that, honestly, Alex, Peyton Manning, when you look at those, that again, 9 1-and-dones, and you look at his success or lack thereof in the postseason, I really think that Peyton Manning is a victim of postseason circumstances, not poor personal play. And the reason I say that is, and I'm going to break it down, you know, if you look at the numbers, and again, look at the numbers here, of his 12 losses in the postseason, again, 9 of those 1-and-dones, actually, 9 have been teams that have reached the AFC Championship, 7 advanced to the Super Bowl, and 6 ended up winning the entire enchilada. So when you look at these losses that Peyton has had, I mean, about 70 to 80% of the time, Peyton has been playing a team that has gone on to have unheralded success in the postseason. I can go back to 1999. Now, again, he was only a sophomore in the league and a rookie in the playoffs, and it's no surprise that he struggled against the 13-3 Titans. The Colts ended up losing that game 19-16, excuse me. So how much weight can you put on that game? Now I can go to 2000. Played the Miami Dolphins of all teams. The Dolphins boasted the third-best defense in the league, and the Fins led the league in forcing 23 regular season interceptions while allowing just 11 passing TDs. The Dolphins ended up winning that game in overtime, 23-17. But the Dolphins also lost in the next round. So that's one of those rare circumstances where Peyton Manning had an opportunity to sort of submit, you know, and add to his legacy by facing a subpar team at best. Let's rewind time. Well, let's fast forward time now. Let's go to 2005. You know who they played in that year, right? The Pittsburgh Steelers, who were 11-5. Manning couldn't get through that heralded steel curtain defense. And again, had high pressure rush defense. Also intercepted as many balls as it allowed touchdowns in the regular season. They lost to the Pittsburgh Steelers that year, but the Steelers also won the Super Bowl that year out in the D. Now, going to 2006, you know, this would be my last one here. Again, he was with the Indianapolis Colts. Well, they lost to the Indianapolis Colts, excuse me. The Colts would be denied as Peyton finally won his first and perhaps overdue ring against the Chicago Bears. So he finally cracked in 2006 with the Colts, finally. But again, if you look at, again, look at the history, Peyton, it's not like Peyton has been eliminated by teams that had no fathom at all in being in the conversation of winning the Super Bowl. Again, I think more so he has been a victim of postseason circumstances, Alex. So for me, when you talk about where he is in my whole all-time list of QBs, I would put Peyton Manning in my top five. He would probably just make it because at the end of the day, it is all about what you do, and it is about the rings. It's all about what you do when it matters most in the postseason. But when you look at Peyton Manning's record, and looking at his overall stats, I mean, they can compete with any quarterback who has played the game of football. And there are very few QBs out there that can boast those type of numbers. Point blank, period. So I think it's kind of, I can see, because I do think, especially now that the Denver Broncos have been eliminated out of the playoffs by, ironically, his former team, the Indianapolis Colts, and Andrew Luck, who is on the up and up when it comes to NFL supremacy at that position. I think it's a legitimate argument to have that discussion now because it's happened 9 times. And, you know, when we look at the numbers, 12 playoff losses overall for Peyton Manning, it's legitimate to have this discussion. But don't let the numbers and the opponents fool you when you look at why Peyton hasn't gotten it done in the postseason. Peyton cracks my top five again, Alex. I'm putting him at number 5, though.
No, I would put him also in the top 5. But again, though he lost a lot of years in the postseason, it's maybe aside from this year, it's not like he wasn't putting up any points. It's not like they're putting up under 10 points a game, under 20. The years that he has been in the playoffs and the one-and-done years, they put up 20, 30 points, and they just can't get it done. The defense couldn't get it done that year. So with that, you also have to look at other areas of the stat sheet. Also look at the weapons behind Peyton Manning, when John Elway was quarterback, he had, you know, the very famous Terrell Davis.
Exactly. Right.
With Peyton Manning, there really wasn't as much star power behind in the backfield, taking away a lot of the carries.
Right.
A lot of the possessions.
And even defensively, a lot of those teams that Peyton played on weren't, they were solid defensive teams, but not outstanding defensive units.
True. So with that, a lot of intangible factors there. I still would put him in the top five, but nothing more than top three. I'd say he probably leaks around the fifth position, maybe four. There's still the very, very best Johnny Unitas. You'd say maybe even Tom Brady, and then Joe Montana. So that for me, I mean, I read something earlier that had it in a similar order. I like the order where you put Montana, Brady, and Unitas together. Peyton is leaking over that five or four position.
Do you put Joe Flacco in your top 10 of all time?
Oh, no way.
And I bring
Get
up that question because you remember before the playoffs even started, I talked about Joe Flacco's numbers. Now, Joe Flacco, for those of you who don't know out there, folks, he actually boasts the highest QBR when you compare any other QB in the league today. And that, yes, includes Aaron Rodgers. That includes Tom Brady. That includes Drew Brees. And, yes, that does include Peyton Manning. Joe Flacco, he has had arguably one of the best stints in the postseason for a quarterback in NFL history. But you are not going to hear his name amongst the ranks of the football elite of quarterbacks. Not at all. And that's just a perfect example to show you that, yeah, it does hold some weight as to what you do when it matters most. But that's not the end-all to be-all when it comes to a quarterback or player, for that matter's legacy. Folks, what do you think? 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. We've got about 7 minutes left in the show. Call in. Let's hit our second break. When we come back, let's wrap up the show by talking a little Tigers. And are we really going to see this Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao fight happen? We'll talk about that and more. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Really quickly, I want to remind you all again that today at 5 p.m., I'll be sitting down with, 5:30 to be exact. I'll be sitting down with Ira Childress, who is the athletic director for Okemos High School. Ira is my guest on this week's Current Sports. So if you want to be a part of that live studio audience tonight, just simply go to WKAR.org to sign up online for free. Really briefly, Alex, before wrapping the show up with Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather, four Tigers have filed for arbitration. Now, you know, interesting story here because David Price, Alfredo Simone, J.D. Martinez, and Al Albuquerque are the Tigers that have filed for arbitration prior to yesterday's deadline. Now, each player, along with the Tigers, submit proposed salary figures by this Friday. Now, if they cannot come to an agreement, the cases will be brought to an arbitrator next month. The Tigers have never had a case go before an arbitrator in the Dave Dombrowski era. Again, Price, Simone, Martinez, those three out of the four, excluding Al Albuquerque, have increased projected salaries for this upcoming season. What are your thoughts on that, Alex? Because I had never really heard about an arbitration story until today. I actually had to come into the engineering studio and ask you about it because I really never heard about
it. It's funny because the reason you and I have not heard this story is because it's the first time that Dave Dombrowski and the Tigers have to go through it. They really haven't had any players to really go through salary arbitration before.
Right.
So, you know, most of the guys that they've had in the past, the Bondermans, the Zamayas, some of these past Tigers players that were young, they really hadn't gotten to the point that they had an expiring contract before they were 6 years through. So the rule is, you know, you have to be 6 years until you get full free agency access. For the Tigers, Al, what this means is it's going to cost them some more money. That means that for these players like Price, Porcello, JD, they deserve a little bit more money than they're getting now. And that means that although their contract states that they have to play for 6 years before getting more money, they're going to get a little bit earlier. So what that means for the Tigers is, hey, are they going to make another move in the offseason, Al, like you alluded to earlier? I don't think so. I don't see it now, the fact that they're going to have to spend a lot more money. And that's why I think the story is really important today, because that frees up a lot of the money that they maybe were looking to spend on maybe another relief pitcher. Maybe it was another infielder to add. So it really depends now what they're going to do.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. And again, you have to look at the numbers and really look at them to see how bad this war hurt other dollars being allocated to other players and the possibility of possibly bringing other players through trades and so on and so forth. You have to really just kind of just dissect the numbers. I think the Detroit Free Press, Anthony Finch, he did a great job of breaking down the numbers in, from the Detroit Free Press. So check out his article. It kind of goes through each player's salary. It does have perceived numbers when it comes to this arbitration situation. So you can take a look at the numbers and I guess formulate an opinion on yourself. So we'll see as far as, you know, if it's settled. And, you know, again, it's never gone to an arbitrator before in the Dave Dombrowski era. So I don't anticipate it to do. And I guess it's safe to say that I don't anticipate it to happen this year. But only time will tell. So you get to see the numbers. Again, just go to the Detroit Free Press. They have it all broken down by category and player, so on and so forth. All right, Manny Pacquiao with Floyd Mayweather. Alex, let's wrap up the show by talking about this. Only 3 minutes left. Again, Manny Pacquiao has finally agreed to the circumstances to make this fight happen between himself and Floyd Mayweather. Now, again, part of that agreement is that Mayweather would take 60% of the fight's earnings and Pacquiao would take the other 40%. Mayweather and his camp have not commented on these term agreements, but if everything looks good, this fight could be taking place on, I believe, May 2nd. That's Cinco de Mayo, right? On Cinco de Mayo, May 2nd. So May-per-view is what they like to dub it. Oh, is that May 5th? I think May 5th is Cinco de Mayo. Excuse me. May 2nd is a few days before. So, Alex, do you think this fight is ever going to happen?
Well, look, I mean, they've said stuff back and forth before, but I mean, he's got, what, Floyd has one fight left? Two fights left for his contract?
Two fights, yeah.
So, I mean, the fact that it's coming down to the end and he's saying it, I mean, he's explicitly said it's going to happen, I think it holds a little bit more weight this time. I honestly do think it's going to happen because Floyd wants to be the best. You know that. He said that before. He's upset that he's not the undisputed champion of all time. And people know, and he knows, the only way to be, quote-unquote, the best it's to fight Manny Pacquiao.
Mm-hmm.
That's
right.
The only thing that's
right.
going to basically help his legacy in the world of boxing. So I think it will happen for that reason.
To be the best, you got to fight the best. And I've always argued that Manny Pacquiao is, especially at one point back in 2008, was the best challenger to knock off possibly Floyd Mayweather. And he dodged him for so many years.
And that's the other thing that since it's later in Manny Pacquiao's career, it may not have that bout that you were looking for earlier.
Right. Floyd Mayweather has seen Pacquiao, you know, hit the bottom of the ring a few times. And hey, I tell you what, though, Manny Pacquiao looked very good in his last fight. I will say that. But still, he waited and baited until this moment here where Pacquiao was a little older, maybe a little slower, even though I don't think he's lost that much of a step. But hey, I won't believe it until I see it. I feel as though I've heard this before. I would not believe that this fight is going to take place until I see it. If it does happen, it could possibly break the record for the most viewed fight of all time, because I told myself I'm not paying for another Mayweather fight unless he goes against Manny Pacquiao. So, yeah, he's done getting my money. So, but hey, if he does fight him, I will be glued to my television. All right, well, my least favorite time of the show has come. We have to wrap things up. Thanks so much to all of you for tuning in to today's Current Sports. Shout out to Brooks Lambeer of Impact Sports for joining me today. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. Have one fantastic day. And be easy, people.